Cockfight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head, and today we are back with another piece of gear and another beer. Yeah, that's right. It's your weekly dose of gear and beer. I'm Colin True. I spent over 20 years working for brands and makers in the outdoor industry.
And I am still Justin Hausman, a journalist, professional gear reviewer, senior editor at Adventure Journal.
Today, we'll be reviewing a piece of gear the way you would expect gear to be reviewed on the Rock Fight. We don't talk about stack height, geometry, or width underfoot. We talk about the experience, our likes, and our dislikes.
Colin, we've talked about stack height on shoes and geometry in bikes.
Did we?
I think we also talked about how your feet are pretty wide and stuff like that.
Well, that's more of a ski thing than width underfoot, you know.
I know.
Okay, let's move on. Listen, we didn't give numbers. Did we give numbers?
Probably not.
All right, there
I just
you go.
Wanted. I'm just pointed out.
Just keeping it honest around here.
Sometimes we talk about stack height geometry with underfoot.
I have to change the open. Hey, and lastly, because Justin is the official cicerone, not just of the Rock Fight, but of the entire outdoor community, we will then follow up the gear review with the perfect post-activity beer pairing. Don't know what a cicerone is? Don't worry about it. Nobody does, but trust us, it's a real thing.
At least it was a few years ago. I assume it's still
is. Is it no longer a real thing?
No, I'm sure it is.
Is there like a governing body of cicerones?
There is. Yeah, in Chicago.
Does someone get paid to like manage? Are you accountable to somebody? Is someone going to hear this podcast and get angry at you as like, you know, are you saying something?
God,
wrong?
I really hope so.
The bottom line here is you'll get the pairings that matter most, gear and beer. All right, Justin, what are we reviewing today?
Today, Colin, and everybody else out there. We're going to go with a little old school review today of a product that you definitely know. Everybody out there knows it. Probably, what do you think, if you had to guess, what percentage of like, you know, relatively hardcore outdoor users do you think, or, you know, recreationists have used this product, Colin? What do you think?
Oh, I thought you were going to go more general public with that question. I mean, pretty high.
It's got to be like 70, 80%.
Your specific product
not
or
this
the category?
Specific one, but this category and more or less.
The category's got to be like over 80%, I would say.
Yeah, I would. Here, let's see if I'm going to make a sound to see. Maybe this will. I just dumped crumbs all over my keyboard. Okay. Can you hear that, Colin?
No, but I have a feeling when I listen to it back, I will.
Yeah, you're going to hear it so loud. We're going with the old school gas lantern from Coleman. This particular model is the premium dual fuel. I'll get into that in a second. The sort of the reason that we're talking about this seemingly like ubiquitous, like honestly, I was thinking about this. Like I think there's probably like a camping emoji and it's probably like a tent.
Yeah.
But like I guarantee when they were thinking about it, they probably considered the lantern, right? Like the Coleman lantern is a camping emoji. It's just such a ubiquitous piece of gear. But, I mean, people don't, unless you're like 75 years old, you don't often see people using these that much anymore. You know, everybody's gone to battery powered lanterns and I get it. I mean, so did I. I haven't owned one of these. I've never owned one of these until now. But I was assigned to write a piece on the history of the Coleman lantern for Adventure Journal, which will be coming up in our next issue. Yeah. And I just got like fascinated by them. And I remembered how much I enjoyed using them in the past. I was trying to think if maybe it was like when I was an archaeologist and like maybe we were working in the evenings. Like I have like specific memories of like using one often enough to have to replace the mantles and stuff like that. But again, I've never owned one. So I don't really know. Maybe it's like a past life. They've been around long enough to where I've could have had one in a past life and that's sort of creeping in. I don't know. Anyway, once I started writing the article, I was like, I got to get one. Like, and the other thing that was cool is in researching it, there are all these clubs all over the country that, are just Coleman collectors. And cause the company's been around for over 100 years. And so they, the biggest one has these things called light ups. Well, where like, they'll just meet at wherever, you know, various places in the country. People just bring their like carloads of old Coleman lanterns and they'll just light them up and just stand around, I guess, in the light, and just talk about it. But it's like a huge collector's thing. And you can see why. I mean, they look cool. They're all battered and like, you know, most of them are either green or red, like Coleman green. Mine is not, mine's gray, but like Coleman green's been a thing for a long time. There's some red ones too, but, it's a cool story. I encourage everybody to pick up Adventure Journal 33, which will that's our summer issue, so it'll come out in a couple months. But that's where I dig into the history. And I just posted a review about this particular one to the website the other day, and in the AJ website, which you can read, and I encourage you to do so. But in typical Hausman fashion, like, I didn't go nuts on what it weighs and all and like stuff like that. So if you want to, I mean, there's not much to say. It's a lantern, right? Like,
you didn't talk about stack
it lights up. Yeah. I didn't talk about the geometry, you know, the head tube angle. But anyway,
the category is fascinating because I was doing just some digging around for, you know, the show notes here before we recorded, and like, we'll get to it when we talk about the category at large. There's still a fair amount of like lanterns, but you think about like, this is like, what's the bridge here? You would, I mean, not to spoil it, maybe you talk about this in the article that you wrote, but like, you go from like the torch, right? Like old school torch.
Like an actual fire on a stick.
Like a stick with like shit wrapped around it. Yeah. To then you have like, you think about, okay, there's the lantern, and now I'm getting like old prospector days, like, you know, in my head of like down there.
Yeah.
And cinnamon then and now gravy. The category still exists. It's a lot of obviously electric stuff out there, but you know, the lighting sort of, but also like this sort of, I don't know, there's like a ubiquitousness, I feel like, to the lantern, and it's kind of, to your point, your question about like how many outdoor people know about a lantern or have seen or used a lantern. And at some point, does that faucet just get cut off? You know what I mean? I guess there's so many lighting solutions now when you go camping between your headlamps or your phone.
Why would you ever reach for a literally gas-powered lantern? Like, why would you do that?
You can get solar-powered lamps and shit. Like, you don't, it's crazy.
I mean, I have all that stuff, you know, like, but that's what we're going to talk about. And I talk about that in the review. I don't really talk about it that much in the written piece, because the written piece is more about the history of it. But the review is basically, why in the world would you use one of these? Because, you know, my gear shed is filled with every possible kind of, you know, battery powered light you could have. And they're fine. They're great. I've never had an issue with them. I've never even thought about it. Honestly, if I hadn't been assigned this article, I never would have even thought to buy one of these.
So, right, knowing you like I do, I can't imagine, this must have been like an automatic yes. Like, here comes the assignment. You're like, hell yeah, I'm going to get an old school lantern. You must have been stoked, right?
Obviously, because like, clearly I have an affinity I didn't even realize I had until recently of this kind of old school camping gear. I mean, it's I don't know what it is. I guess it's not nostalgia. I didn't grow up camping. I didn't grow up with these, but there's something about it that's like, I'm staring at it right now. It's kind of funky looking, but it's kind of sexy too. Like, there's just, it's just way more. Okay. Right now in front of me, I have a BioLite battery powered lantern.
Yeah.
That's super cute. It looks like the size of like a slightly thicker hockey puck. Maybe turns different colors. If you shake it, it goes into candle mode. The battery life is fantastic. You can hang it from the bed of your truck. It's awesome. Like, I love these things.
What would you take? Head to head. You're going lantern. Yeah.
The lantern. The lantern. Like, all day long. And like, and part of it is the light it produces. Okay, so let's get into this one. So so Coleman makes a few different kinds of fuel powered lanterns. I'm not an expert on the rest of them, so I can't tell. They make some that like burn kerosene specifically, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
This one burns both gasoline and what's called Coleman fuel, which is essentially, that's white gas. And like, if you've ever heard the term white gas, that's basically the generic term for Coleman fuel, which is like a slightly cleaner version of gasoline, I believe. It doesn't really smell like much.
Right.
It doesn't smell anything like gasoline.
Most backpacking stoves are white gas, those kinds of things.
Well, like old school ones, or like, I mean,
sorry,
now
like
they're
like a whisper light or something
exactly.
like that. Right, right, right.
Like if you're able to refill it, it's white.
Right.
Gas. If you're able to refill your backpacking stove, it's white gas. If you're able to refill your cook stove, it's white gas. Not screw on a propane bottle and not screw on an isobutane canister for a backpacker stove. So anyway, this one, I haven't used it with gasoline. I've read only bad things about doing that. I mean, one, it would be smelly. Two, it doesn't burn it quite as clean, I don't think. Three, you have to like burn all of it before you put the Coleman fuel in it. So that'd be kind of a pain. But I could see in a pinch, you know, like if for, you know, I don't know if you're an overlander and you have 15 gas cans on your Jeep. And like,
I feel like,
know.
Like the movie part of my brain wants there to be like gas, like smelly gas in there. Like it should be dust all over it. Like you're
totally.
Indiana Jones in a cave or something like that.
I mean, okay. So if you get one of these, you will walk around holding it by the hand and making the whatever that you have to. I was doing that last night.
Are
you in
family, a ghost story? Are you in an adventure story? Yeah. What are you in?
All
but
of it.
Yeah,
all
right.
Of it.
Yeah.
You might be finding the Ark of the Covenant. It's possible that you might.
You might.
If someone ever does find it, it'll be lit.
It's an old competition. Coleman started running in the 20s. No one has done it yet. You know, like buy a lantern, you'd find the Ark of the Covenant.
I bet you if the Ark of the Covenant was real, which of course it's not, and you went in there with like artificial light, you wouldn't even see it. But
it would just be
Coleman
invisible.
Lantern, with Coleman lantern, it would light it right up.
You've chosen poorly if you have artificial light.
So the way these bad boys work is kind of interesting. It's a pressurized system. So if you used one, you will remember pumping them. And the reason that you do that is to turn the fuel into a gas. And so it has a nice round base. It has a glass, what they call a globe, even though it's a cylinder. And then it has two little, let's be honest, it looks like a ball sack. These two. I mean, they really do.
It really does.
I mean, separated quite a bit. It would look extremely odd.
Maybe a cocoon.
Probably a much more mature way to say it.
Yeah, but I was right there with you though. So don't be embarrassed by where your instincts led you.
These two little rayon mesh sacks. The neat thing about them is, so that's what technically burns. Well, does they don't actually burn. That's what burns, and I'm making air quotes, to produce the light. So what happens is you pump the there's a little plunger, you pump that, it pressurizes the fuel, turns it into a gas mixture, that goes into the cylinder, and then you light it through a little hole in the bottom with a match or a lighter if you're feeling brave. And the mantles immediately catch and burn for a second, and then the flame goes away, and they just glow with this beautiful white light. Now, mm-hmm. What's interesting is until I wrote this article, I always assumed the mantles themselves are burning, but they don't. The mantles are dipped in... Coleman won't actually say, like, it's a rare earth element. And like,
this
some
is my only question from your blog post on AJ was like, yeah. Okay, but what are the rare earth elements?
So I suspect it's changed as like, with like environmental things over the years. Like apparently at one point it's been something called chromium.
Is it proprietary? Is that what it is? Like,
think it's proprietary. I mean, it's a rare earth element. It can't be proprietary. It's good out point. There in the world. So like,
the word rare kind of freaks me out. Like how much,
well, that's
stuff
an actual, that's an actual term. It's not, they're not describing it. I mean, that's like a rare earth element. Is like,
oh, okay.
Not,
so that's an actual, oh, really?
That's like a scientific term. Yeah.
Oh.
So it's been a few different things. I don't know what it is now, but anyways, what's interesting is the rayon is impregnated in that.
Yeah.
And that's what burns. The rayon mantle doesn't actually burn. So it's the goop that is dipped into that burns.
That is
so
rare.
That is rare. And then you adjust the light with a cool knob on the front, and that's how it
works.
That's it. So what's awesome about it though is that, and what's interesting is last night my family was camping sort of in these like very rustic cabins on the coast. And I had this lantern, and then I had a couple of these BioLite lanterns, which their Alpenglow is the model. I love these BioLite things. They're awesome. We did a full video thing about it with AJ. They're really sweet lanterns.
Yeah.
But it's really cool to have them back to back, like, or next to each other. You realize right away the artificial, I mean, I'm using the term artificial light, and by that I mean battery powered. Makes sense.
Yeah, I got you. I mean, that's
versus
a good point,
like,
right?
Like light coming from fire, more or less. Immediately it looks harsh to your eyes. Like I would never have thought about that normally, but when you have the Coleman next to it, there's a huge difference in terms of the softness and the comfort that the light produces. The like your typical battery powered lantern, it just kind of brightens things. The Coleman lantern is a really warm, inviting light. It's pretty cool. It makes a nice hiss sound because you can hear the shh of like which you'll instantly remember if you haven't had one for a long time and you like fire it up.
So did Coleman invent ASMR? Was that like the original?
Honestly, like I thought about that. Like it would be so nice to just fall asleep to this, but that would be probably a bad idea. Because it is fire, right? Like there's it
can burn.
Heat.
You can you light it with a match.
I don't know what happens if you knock it over. I presume there's all kinds of like safety things that it doesn't spill.
You know,
fuel,
I would have, that
know.
Should have been part of your testing methods. You know, like throw it at the side of your house and see what
happens. Honestly, I did think about doing that but I don't want to break the globe, the glass thing,
or set your house on fire.
Well, I'm 99% sure there's a lot of words on it, which I haven't read and probably never will unless I'm really bored or bring it into an outhouse with me. that probably talk about what happens if you knock it over and why you shouldn't, but I'm not going to read that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what started the Great Chicago Fire, I think, but that was probably a different kind of lantern.
That's true.
So that's pretty much it. So they've made this particular, so Coleman's been around since like 1914 or something. I'm not going to spoil the backstory because I want you to go buy AJ33 when it comes out. And it's impossible to do your own research on this. I had all kinds of primary source materials that you'll never find online, so don't even try. You have to read
Whoa! Like throwing out the don't you fucking copy me.
Don't even try it. You have to read there's no other way to find this.
You
want to
list the journalists you're speaking to directly right now? Like, do you want
to? No, that's primary sources, bro. No journalists. I was back in the archives.
Okay. No, the people you're threatening. Who are the journalists you're worried about?
No. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, you got to go buy it you're not going to learn this anywhere else.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Anyway, So Coleman's been around since 1914. The basic principle behind this lantern has been in existence since 1928. So essentially 100 years.
That's 94 years. I mean, 96 years ago.
Yep. And like they, like if you look at pictures of them from like the 40s, they don't look any different. I'm sure, right. I'm sure it's heavier. I'm sure like there's only a couple pieces of plastic on here. And I'm sure those were metal back then.
The font was probably way better back then.
Listen to you.
Yeah.
Know that term. That's the
old
base.
School font back in the 20s. Yeah. You know what? Dope?
Wait, you mean font like the way it's written.
Oh yeah. What did you think I meant?
Well, so the base of it is called a font.
That's
what I thought you were talking
about. I mean, that is what I meant. Yes. Yeah. no, I just meant the writing on it. It's like a fucking moron over here.
So the other thing that's cool, actually, not really, honestly.
Actually, the Coleman logo probably is like relatively unchanged, right?
It's been pretty much the same.
Yeah, yeah.
So the cool thing about this is, so Coleman has changed hands a bunch. Like, it was in the family until, I think, like, 86. And mm-hmm. then it's gone through a couple different, like, acquisitions by big, giant, multinational corporations. And, you know, they make a lot of other stuff. They make tents. They obviously make stoves. I mean, stoves is another big one. But they make tents. They make RVs, or at least they have their brand on an RV.
Amazing.
They do all kinds of other stuff, a lot of different lighting. I mean, they make all kinds of battery-powered lighting and stuff like that, too. This, I don't know if this is the only one, although it might be. These are handmade. It's not entirely, but made in Wichita. They're made in Wichita, Kansas, at a factory that, like, that's kind of where Coleman was when they started out. I don't think the same factory, but in the same zone. And I put a cool video of the process of making these things on the AJ website. So anyway, as you can tell, I've been talking about this thing for a long time. I just think it's great.
You're fired up.
I don't know, like, you know, it didn't even really occur to me how much we've been harping on, like, kind of hipster, old school, retro type products on the podcast until, honestly, I started talking about this one. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm just attracted to that kind of thing. But I put the story on LinkedIn, and the guy that you had on the show a while back, Wesley Walls, is that his name? Wes Allen?
Oh, Wes Allen, yeah.
Commented on it with a big, long paragraph about how, and he's totally right about how, like, something about how, like, for any kind of campsite that you're not going to backpack to, there's not going to be a more inviting light than what you'll get from one of these.
And that's awesome.
That is spot on accurate.
Good job, Wes.
And that's the point, right? That's why you buy these. This is $110. You can get a more expensive one that puts out a bit more lumens. I forget. I had the number written down. I can't find it. It's like 800,
yeah,
1,000 lumens.
Dude. I mean, come on. Are we talking like, let's get back to like our, but, like.
Well,
like,
just for comparison's sake. I mean,
sure,
compared
to
something you might be familiar with. I mean, they get really bright.
Yeah.
But it's not like it's not harsh. It's not like a piercing light. And they get real nice and real low, which is nice, which is cool. And there's just something really pleasant about having to pump it, having to put fuel in it, having to, you know, like, deal with actual flame.
Do we even want to talk about, like, you know, using gas and the, like, you know, potential, like, you know, I don't know. Like, we talk a lot about, you know, moving to a more sustainable future, all that kind of stuff. This is one of those I feel like just needs to be grandfathered in. Like, I don't know. Like, what should we, do we need to talk about that?
That
it's gas powered and things like that.
I mean, like, I don't know. I wrestled with that for a minute. I haven't had it. I mean, I've been using it every night since I've had it because I have a backyard and the weather's been nice. So I like to sit out there and read. And I'm kind of wanting to see how long it will take for the fuel to go out. And, you know, it burns for it. It's pretty, it's not like it's super thirsty. I mean, it takes a couple days of using it like constantly before you start to notice that you're like running low on fuel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's just something that, I guess, you know, I'm as, like, you know, concerned about the climate and carbon emissions as anybody else.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, the thing is like, for the most part, I'm only using this places where I had to drive to anyway. So, like, what am I going to, like, another thimble fuel of fuel is going to make a difference. So, I don't know. I mean, if that's a huge issue for you, don't get one. But
that's a good way to get into the category, right? So I just went digging around. I'm sure you did as well, right? So there's 63 products right now on REI under the category Lantern.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy shit, that's a lot. But only three of them are fuel-based.
Are they all made by Coleman?
Yeah, no, they're all Coleman.
There are a couple. There is at least one other brand, and I can't remember what it's called right now, that makes this. And like I said, you can get oil lanterns. And I think you get, like, I think other brands that just make kerosene lanterns too.
Yeah.
So they don't have, like, a monopoly. Well, they kind of do have a monopoly, but, I mean, you can get other brands.
But so we're talking about 53 electric lanterns. You know, most of them, you know, and I'm sure they all serve a purpose and everything, but, I mean, that's so many. And most of them look terrible when you compare them to the classic nature of the Coleman lantern.
Well, so, you know, again, love these BioLite ones. I have three of them. One of them doesn't work anymore. I don't know why. It doesn't charge.
What do you do with that?
And it's like, did I drop it? Like, I don't know what happened. It's probably, honestly, it's probably something as simple as, like, a little wire got, like, pulled off of something and it won't charge, but
could you
I can't
get your Coleman
it.
Repaired?
Yes. So you can get your Coleman repaired. You could probably work on it yourself. But you can send it back to Coleman and they'll fix stuff.
They'll buff it up. And
like I said, you can easily find examples of this that are 70 years old that work fine. And you know, one of the things that's nice about it, and it's not something I ever really intend on testing out, but you know, it's like, I think a lot of us who have a ton of camping gear kind of consider ourselves, whether we realize it or not, I guess if we're considering ourselves, we're definitely realizing it, but you know, almost like a prepper in some ways, right? Like you certainly, when you think about, you know, calamities and stuff, at least I anyway go, well, you know, at least I have like an REI in my garage, you know, like,
yeah, right.
Okay.
You have stuff.
We'd be okay for a while. Like I can filter water. I have like, all, you know, I have stuff to cook with, all these sorts of things. And like, if you didn't have electricity for a while and you had a bunch of Coleman, you know, white fuel or even just gas.
Yeah.
You're fine. Light wise. One of the earliest I could find reference to these being used in camping was from like 1917 in that Outdoor Life magazine, which has been around forever.
Right.
And they kind of bill it as a great thing to bring with you while car camping because you have gas. So you could just like siphon gas from your tank, or maybe people drove around with extra gas back in those days. And so you'd always, theoretically, you could always have light if you have some access to some sort of petroleum-based fuel. So I think that's cool. It's never going to break. If it does, I can fix it. You can buy the glass cylinders at your local hardware store if you need to. You can buy Coleman fuel at like any hardware store in the world. I love this thing.
I think the thing too, when you're talking about car camping, you are getting into a little bit more extravagant version of like, you're not going minimal. You're going to have some stuff that make your experience more comfortable. And yeah, to your exact point, I mean, I get it. If you're really sensitive to, oh, there's gas in that and I don't want to use, you know, carbon-based fuels, whatever. This is a good one to make an exception on because like, okay, well now you have a battery, you know, problem if you're using other lanterns that are running off a battery, or even if they're rechargeable, there's still a problem that comes with all these things when you get to the end of life. And one of the first things you said here is this thing, there's a group of people who get together and celebrate their lanterns that are like 100 years old or close to 100 years old.
How cool is that? No one's going to be doing that with like a headlamp.
With your bio lamp or whatever you have on your desk, yeah, right? I mean, yeah, so yeah. This is a really good one. What do you rate it? What's the rating of the Coleman? Is this a 10 out of 10?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I mean, it couldn't do what it does any better, right?
Yeah.
I don't see an improvement that you could make with this thing.
Yeah, I like that there's a little bit of, I like the nature of it. I like the fact that you got to pump the thing to get to turn it into gas. And it's just, I don't know, that you do have to put gas back in it when it's burning down. I don't know, there's just something about it that's just really homey and wonderful.
Not that like I am by no means this much of like an energy weenie where I'm thinking about this sort of thing. But
right,
one of the things I do like about something like this is like, okay, so say you have your normal battery powered lantern and you know, you're charging it off of your other, you know, your power block that you have, you know,
right,
that you charge from your house, whatever. Like there's nothing at stake when the battery runs out other than it gets dark, right? Like you're not really like aware of anything. It's just on or it's not. You don't really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. There's something about having like physically having to refuel the lantern where you're like kind of aware, okay, this is on, or like I'm using energy. Like
right,
I'm going to have to deal with this. I'm going to have to pay to buy more fuel. I'm going to have to like refill it. Like it's not just this thing that's just on and I don't care about it or think about where the energy is coming from.
It's like being in a hut on like in the wintertime. You got to like the wood stove, you know, right? You know, yeah. It's like if you got a concept, oh, we got to make sure we're feeding the fire.
You got to kind of mind it. And yeah, like, while that sounds like inefficient and probably something a whole lot of people are not remotely interested in, and believe me, I get you. I kind of like that right now at this point in my outdoor life. So obviously I'm not going to take this freaking thing backpacking. Although, you know, Robert Peary, or was it Peary?
I don't know.
I don't think it was Peary. Somebody, because Peary went to go to the North Pole. Maybe he went to the South Pole too. Like it's been like people took these to the South Pole. You know, like people take these on expeditions, you know, or they did,
right,
you know,
right.
So like you can do that if you want. But it's just, if you haven't used something like this in a long time, totally worth like going out and picking one up. You can get them used. You can get them cheap, yeah, on Craigslist. You know, if as long as a collector hasn't like swooped in and nabbed it. But
yeah, they are available. I mean, they are. It's on Amazon. If you want to, you know, give Bezos your money, you got it's at REI. It's at Coleman.com. I'm sure it's at other retailers. It's a great product.
It's probably at your local hardware store if you have a big one.
And then, so just
definitely if you live in Kansas, I'm sure you can get it.
So we are sort of redefining the stuffometer this week, so it kind of be a little bit more of a category commentary, right? Because, you know, like, it's a 10 out of 10 product for you, and we don't want to discredit that because, like, that is a that's awesome. And frankly, like, all you're talking about this, I read your blog, and all I want to do, or your newsletter update, and all I want to do is go buy one of these things now just to, like, go outside. To your point, like, go sit in my backyard. I don't even really need to take a camping. I just kind of want to have one, you know? It's just a cool, what a cool item to have. Yep. So, but the category, though, like 63 items on just REI.com, that means there's probably more out there. Like, do we need that many lanterns? And I'm sure within that 63 or 53 that aren't fuel, that aren't gas powered, there's probably some small ones and some big ones, and there's reasons for them. I get it. Rechargeable ones, whatever. But, you know, what do you think?
I guess I'm going to say, I mean, because you could obviously do without. I mean, that's the thing. You could do without.
Why do I need a lamp? I have a flashlight on my phone. It's pretty good, by the way. If you take your phone in a dark room and just set it upside down,
it works great. So, I mean, do you need it? Do you need it? No. You know, but I mean, that's, but you don't, I hate to say it, you don't need to go camping. I mean, like, this is weird.
Sure.
You're not, unless you are literally homeless or whatever, like, you're doing this for fun.
Yeah.
Right? Like, for the most part. I mean, some people will have to sleep outside for work, but you're doing this for fun. So, therefore, none of this technically needs to exist. I'm going to give a 7.5.
For the category?
Yeah.
At what point does it fall below a 5 for you then? Like 100 lanterns? Like what, you know?
Well, because it's the gas one. Like it's the one. Like if this was gone, there'd be really no other gas.
No, but we're talking
lantern.
About the category, the lantern category, 63 different, you know, not just the gas one. The gas, I thought you gave it a 10. Oh, wait. Are you talking about
the product is a 10. But the category, I mean, like a gas lamp as a category, I think it's like a 7. Yeah.
Right, it's a 10 for that too, right? No, only three, and they're all made by Coleman.
Yeah, but I would say we don't really need, we've obviously confused ourselves with the new stuffometer.
No, my thing is let's talk it through. So there's including the gas lanterns, there's 63 on REI.
Yeah.
So the category of lanterns is 63 products large minimum. Yeah. There's probably ones that they don't carry.
Yeah.
So do we need 63 lanterns?
No, of course not.
So wouldn't that be more like a 4? As like if you're rating
no,
the category?
No, but it's the, yeah. So the cat, okay. So I guess that's where I was confused. So you're saying as far as the lantern category period or this thing within the lantern category?
The lantern category, right? Because it's still a thing you camp with and it throws light and there's 63 of them on REI that you can choose from. That's a lot. That sounds like a lot of lanterns to me.
Yeah, but there's only one of these.
Right, but that one you gave a 10. Should we be making fewer lanterns? In general, not just the gas ones.
Now I don't even know what to do with this new stuffometer. Because it's like, you have to have a lantern. So it's like, what is that? So
right, but if you go on and it's just like, it's a thing after thing after thing. I mean, I don't know. It's like 15, the right number for a total lanterns. Three of them are fuel.
Well, sure. But that's.
Is that too much? You don't think we should be judging this stuff? You don't think it's tough for us to weigh in on this?
It's too, well, yeah. Because like, I don't think we both are talking about this in the same way. Because it's like, to me, lantern as a category, period. Yeah, okay, just because there's a lot of them doesn't mean it's unimportant. I mean, there's a lot of them because they're really important. You have to have light. So you can't dismiss the category and say, well, there's too many of them, therefore they're all unimportant. And so this is also one of one, effectively, or one of three.
Sure.
According to the REI website. So, like, I would have to say, I think gas lantern gets its own category is what I'm saying. I don't think gas lantern can fit under the regular lantern category.
Okay. All right.
So that's where I'm ranking it.
This is fantastic.
Well, okay. I think you should. Yeah. I think I'm ranking it within the category of lantern period. Like where does a gas lantern rank in the category of lantern? And to me, that's like a 7.5 because you don't really need to have it, but I would be really bummed if it was gone.
100%.
But I would also be just fine if I had to use only battery powered light is what I'm saying.
So now let's take the 53 56 non-gas lantern styles that are on REI.com. Doesn't that seem excessive that there's over 50 different electric lanterns?
But I mean, is there a category that isn't excessive in the outdoor space?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, that's kind of what we want to bring some attention to in a gear podcast, I guess, is a little bit of like an acknowledgement of like, we could probably do with a few fewer of these.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. We could.
Did we get there? Did we figure it out?
I think so. Yeah.
All right, now let's turn our attention to after the activity. At the break, the put in the trailhead, we're going to crack open the cooler and imbibe a beverage so we can celebrate our wins and losses in the backcountry. Let's have a beer. So we're all right, we're back in our jorts and hipster bike caps because, you know, we have this old school lantern. You know, we're not using it. We're no electric lanterns here. The hipster train continues here on Gear and Beer. What are we drinking today to go with our old school lantern?
All right, so we've already done Budweiser, which would have been a really good choice with something like this.
Yeah.
Just by the nature of, like, the old school vibe. But, you know, I thought about this long and hard, and what I came up with is Sierra Nevada. Now, the reason being, they've been around since 79. They're one of the, you know, it's kind of the first beers you think about when you think about craft beer in this country. So they are kind of a granddaddy.
Is it Dogfish Head, Sierra, and Sam Adams? Are those kind of like is that the trifecta? Are those the Mount Rushmore? Like,
no, definitely not.
No?
No. Well, I don't know. It's hard to, I mean, that, like, I wouldn't put Dogfish Head up there just because they're big-ish, but they're still pretty niche. Like, but that's also tough
because
you're coming from the East Coast and I come from the West Coast. So to me, I would say like Sierra, Lagunitas, and like Stone would be like the three that immediately jumped to mind for me for like, big, you know, been around for a really long time.
Yeah. You went through a salmon
established.
Then?
I kind of would.
Yeah.
I like Sam Adams beer a lot, but I don't, I think very few people would consider them to be, well, they're not technically
craft. They're huge now, right? They're really big.
And I think most people would probably think of them as more of like just a giant mainstream beer brand.
Right.
But they make phenomenal beer. They obviously started out as a craft beer.
But Sierra's kind of the same now, right? Isn't that kind of the same?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is with like, yeah, totally. I mean, I guess why Sierra still kind of fits into the sort of craft beer category, at least to me, is they still have that vibe about them. Like it's like Sierra Nevada feels like a beer that you could discover in Chico, which is where they're from. Chico, California, sort of near Lassen National Monument or National Park. Like it feels like a beer that you would find in a mountain town that's still regional. Like just the packaging, their vibe, everything about it is like that. So we're doing the pale ale, which if you've ever had, it's funny. Sierra Nevada is one of those things where, you know, they make a lot of different beers. Pale ale is what kind of put them on the map. But most people would just say, I'll have a Sierra Nevada. They mean this. They don't
exactly.
They don't mean something else. Though I highly recommend that you check out their other beers because they're all very good. But this is their pale ale. This is a beer that you might think you don't like. I mean, to be honest, for a long time, I didn't like this beer because I thought I wasn't super into hoppy beers. But it's a robust flavored pale ale. It's probably closer to an IPA than a pale ale. Even the color is a bit darker than most traditional pale ales.
Hmm.
You know, I could get into the sort of difference why, and I guess maybe I will a little bit. So like,
I have not had this in a long time, and I don't recall really liking it much at all when I did have it. And I don't know if that was kind of similar to you. I wasn't into hoppy beers at the time or what, but I guess walk me through what should I be expecting, you know, okay. Like as I drink this.
So basically, you know, not to get too into the weeds here, but like, you know, IPAs are kind of what this is to me is more of an IPA than a pale ale. So an IPA usually means it has a pretty robust, malt character, so it's going to be a little bit golden to like darker golden in color, pretty rich mouthfeel, usually higher in alcohol. This is 5.6%, so most true like IPAs are going to be a bit higher, 7% is not uncommon, and just loaded with hops. And the reason that they're called India Pale Ales, I'm sure most people know that, is because when hundreds of years ago, when the British would make beers to transport around the world, basically they'd take ales with them on these boats, and the ones that were theoretically supposed to last all the way to India were just loaded with hops, and hops are a natural preservative. And so these big like long overseas trips, they would just dump all these hops into their ales so that they would last longer, and then eventually people just got a taste for super hoppy beers.
Right.
So anyway, this one is technically a pale ale, so it's a little bit lighter in color, but not really. And that's what you can expect. A big, robust hop profile, juicy kind of, is how we often describe like a really hoppy beer.
Okay.
But still light enough. It's only 36 IBUs, which is not terribly bitter. So it's hoppy, but not being too bitter. So, you know, hops
important
add
distinction.
Hops can add bitterness. That's what they're for. But like some hops have a naturally like really like tannic, like, you know, sort of, really deep bitterness to them. This doesn't quite have that. So you get the rush of like floral hops and then it kind of backs off. So
okay.
There we go. Now I have a can and you have a bottle. Okay.
Is it a twist off? Is it a twist off? Okay.
No, I don't think so.
All right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1.
I should say it's nice and hot where I am too, so it's going to be especially.
Yeah, it's really
nice.
Warm out today.
Also, another good camping beer, classic camping.
Okay,
beer.
I mean, smells great.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers. Clink. Oh, there it is. There's a Sierra Nevada for you.
I definitely. That's better than I recall it.
Mm-hmm.
This is also why I'm excited we're doing this, because I'm literally at a place where as little as I drink on a daily basis, I may never have had a Sierra Nevada again if we weren't doing this. Because I just went like, oh, no, I'm good. I don't need that. You know,
I don't think to buy it. I mean, right. Every once in a while, I'll see it on draft somewhere. I'll be like, oh, you know, I'll have a Sierra Nevada. But it's not common.
All right. So tell me why we're pairing the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale with the Coleman Lantern.
A couple reasons. One, I mean, this is an outdoor show. It's called freaking Sierra Nevada, right? Like, it doesn't get a whole lot more outdoor than that. There's pictures of mountains right on it. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, that's why. So old school Lantern, old school craft beer, it seems like a good, you would definitely be wanting to drink sit around, drink a Sierra Nevada while you have your Coleman Light. I mean, it's be good. That'd be good.
So you're coming, you're like, you're on the East Coast and you get the word that there's been gold discovered in California. Your Coleman Lantern, you hightail it across the country, and now you've been digging for gold all day or panning for gold, and you want to crack open a beer. What do you open up? You're in Chico, California. Like, there's the Sierra Mountains. You can see them.
Maybe. It might not be.
Am I painting this picture? Does this work?
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah. Chico's a cool town, if you've never been there. Really, really, I've been there a long time. Chico State University is there. Definitely a college town. Bidwell Park is a really big, like, open space nearby. Good fishing around there. It's a cool little town.
Oh, so what are we going to rate it? We got to rate the beer.
What's the highest one we've done so far? I know I kind of went off with the Athletic.
Got an 8.
Just a straight 8.
Straight 8. Otherwise, it's been 7. You gave 7.5 for a Cali Squeeze. I gave that a 7.1. You gave 7.1 to Budweiser. 8 is the highest. But you also said, as I just got done editing it last week, that it was, you kind of gave it bonus points for the accomplishment.
So I'm going to go with a 7.25. 7.25.
I love the specificity here.
And the tasting it now, kind of with sort of my judging hat on, it is pretty amazing how they all taste the same. Like, they do a really good job of keeping the flavors basically the same.
We talked about that with Budweiser, like how hard it is to make these things taste the same every time you brew it.
Yeah. So they do a good job. I mean, they're a classic for a reason, just like the Coleman Lantern.
So we didn't start rating the beers until the third episode, and then so this is our fourth one we've rated. What do you think you're leaning with your how you're rating? Because I kind of always want to rate them against each other. Like, would I put this one above the other ones I've rated? Like, would I drink? So well, if I would like the Cali Squeeze Blood Orange, I mean, I definitely would drink that.
That's a temptation, but I try to rank them each on their own merits. Like, where is this? If 10 is like a perfect beer, I don't even know what that would be.
Well, right.
Like, where is this? But like, I mean, yeah, that's how I approach all of them, except for Athletic, because it doesn't have alcohol. It's a whole different thing.
So, because if we're gonna go bad, then I probably should have given Athletic a higher score.
It's kind of what it feels like. I mean, what is that? What this be to me? Tasting this right now feels about like a 7.25 out of 10.
Okay. All right, I gotta give it a rating here. All right. Well, I'm gonna go. So I gave the Cali Squeeze 7.1. Okay, so if I'm rating it against other pale ales, I'm gonna go 6.8.
Okay, yeah, that seems right.
Yeah,
that's actually probably better.
Okay, so to summarize this episode of Gear and Beer, we have the Coleman Premium Dual Fuel Lantern, which Justin rated a 10. And as you bask in the glow of your lantern with the slight hiss of burning fuel doing a full ASMR routine on your brain, the official Cicerone of the Rock Fight suggests that you should enjoy yourself with a frosty, cold Sierra Nevada pale ale, which Justin rated a 7.25, and I rated a 6.2. Did I say 6.2? I said 6.8. I said 6.8. Sorry, Sierra. On the Gear and Beer scale. I think we did it. Oh, and what did we decide on the stuffometer? Did we give it a rating?
Yeah.
What was the rating on the stuffometer?
I think it held fast at like 7.5, didn't it?
7.5. All right.
Yeah.
So we like the category.
We like the category.
All right. Well, that's it for the show, man. Anything else? We good? Another gear and beer in the books?
Another gear and beer in the books. Go buy some gear. That's not kind of what we're about. Go hug your favorite gear. You know what? Go sit with your favorite piece of gear and open a beer.
I would tell you to go buy this lantern. I'm going to buy one.
Well,
of these
lanterns. You really should. Yeah, but I mean, you know what? There's nothing wrong. You know what? Like, if you can't go camping, I mean, there's nothing wrong with just like getting out some of your favorite camping stuff and just sitting in it, just kind of playing with it, just being with it, just maybe cracking a beer. It's kind of like going camping.
I mean, the lantern, though, could be like the high watermark, because, I mean, this is something you truly can like hand down to your kids.
I will. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
You're not going to give your Hoka Mafates to your kids, you know?
I mean, if my girls had size 12 feet, I'd be pretty shocked. Yeah, they could, actually. But yeah, I mean, even though last night I was yelling at them not to knock it over. But yes, one day it will be theirs.
All right, well, that's the show for today. What did you think of this edition of Gear and Beer? Do you have a suggestion for a future edition of Gear and Beer, or do you simply dislike Gear and Beer? Send an email to myrockbite@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. The Rock Bite is a production of Rock Bite LLC. For Justin Hausman, I'm Colin Truth. Thanks for listening. And here to take us out, when ambition turns to competition, he'll never be the better man. It's Chris DeMakes with the Rock Fight fight song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Should we have one more sip? Take the crew out?
Yeah. Go. I'm going to put it in the fridge and have it a little bit later.
Mmm.
That's nice. Ah. Yeah. Oh, yours has more words on it than mine. Mine doesn't have any words. Rock Fight!